I'm VOA's Joe Ramsey with your worldwide news update. Israel continues its airstrike campaign on Lebanon in what Israel says are ongoing operations against Hezbollah. This as Hezbollah launches more rocket attacks into Israel. VOA's Arash Arbasadi has the story.
Israeli airstrikes on Sunday crash into southern Beirut. Israel says the attacks are part of its ongoing campaign against Iran-backed terror group Hezbollah. Meanwhile, a residential building in Israel has its side blown out following an attack of more than 185 rockets throughout the country launched by Hezbollah in Lebanon. The militant group began its most recent campaign of launching attacks into Israel following the Hamas terror attacks against Israel on October 7, 2023. Hezbollah said it did so in solidarity with Hamas. Pressure continues climbing for a ceasefire deal between the nations. And the European Union pledged more than $200 million in support of Lebanese armed forces while seeking an end to the war. As cross-border fire continues, Lebanon's caretaker prime minister accused Israel of sending a direct and bloody message rejecting all efforts to reach a ceasefire. The all-out war between Israel and Lebanon erupted in September. About 90 Israeli soldiers and nearly 50 civilians have died so far. And according to Lebanese officials, more than 3,500 people there died, with about 1.2 million people, nearly a quarter of its population, displaced. Arash Arbasadi, VOA News.
This is VOA News. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu on Sunday denounced the killing of a rabbi in the United Arab Emirates as a heinous anti-Semitic terrorist act. Reuters correspondent Alice Rizzo has more.
The body of Rabbi Zvi Kogan was found as tensions in the region continue to rise, with reports of Israeli strikes killing dozens in Lebanon and Gaza over the weekend. Rabbi Kogan managed a kosher supermarket in Dubai, where he went missing on Thursday. He's seen in front of the store in social media video, filmed 2 days before he disappeared. He also worked for an Orthodox Jewish group in the UAE. Netanyahu said on Sunday his country would, quote, act with all means to bring justice to the murderers. Kogan's body was found in the Emirati city of Al Ain, which borders Oman, though it is not clear if he was killed there or elsewhere.
I found it in Al Ain, but...
That's according to a former Israeli Druze politician who spoke to Reuters. Emirati and Israeli authorities have not said who was involved in the killing or what the motive might have been.
Reuters correspondent Alice Rizzo. Nations from around the world reached an agreement on how rich countries can support poor countries in the face of climate change in the early hours Sunday at the UN's COP29 climate conference, but many officials and activists say they are unsatisfied, calling it a far from perfect arrangement. AP correspondent Melina Walling has more from Baku, Azerbaijan.
Rich countries have agreed to pool together at least $300 billion a year by 2035. It's not near the full amount of $1.3 trillion that developing countries were asking for and that experts say was needed. But some delegations said this deal is headed in the right direction, with hopes that more money flows in the future. Activists and experts expressed concern that the agreement lets rich countries off the hook for their role in the climate disasters that are hurting communities around the world. And members of some developing countries said that the number doesn't begin to match their need, and they expressed anger and disappointment at the deal.
AP correspondent Melina Walling. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky on Sunday called on Ukraine's Western partners to concentrate their efforts on helping provide an air defense system able to protect people after Ukraine air defense units shot down 50 of 73 drones launched overnight. Zelensky said Ukraine was working with its allies to find a response to Russia's use of a new medium-range ballistic missile last week. That wraps up this update, but the world and news never stop. For additional updates, visit our website, voanews.com. I'm Joe Ramsey, VOA News.
Morning Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Monday, November 25th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Supporters of Ugandan opposition leader Besigye plan to march to the Kenyan embassy in Uganda today, Monday.
The Kenyan government should be ashamed of it. We condemn the impunity of the Ugandan regime, and we call upon all well-wishing Ugandans to stand against this, to condemn it.
Mozambique presidential runner-up accepts an invitation to dialogue following post-election violence. Nigerian security forces launch new operations against Boko Haram and Islamic State-affiliated fighters. Liberia Supreme Court issued a stay order in the ongoing effort to remove the Speaker of the House of Representatives. Today is the International Day for the Elimination of Violence Against Women.
If African leaders and security personnel who handle femicide cases in a fair way with open sanctions for people to truly see that the perpetrators are punished, femicide will stop.
And the world braces for impacts as Donald Trump revisits international trade wars. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley Sports are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Supporters of Ugandan opposition leader Dr. Kizza Besigye will today, Monday, march to the Kenyan embassy in Uganda to protest what they call gross violations of human rights by the Ugandan and Kenyan governments. They say the alleged abduction of Dr. Besigye, a five-time presidential candidate, violates the principles of unity and free movement of the East African community. Reporter Mugumi Davis Rakaringi has more from Kampala.
Winnie Byanyima, the wife of Ugandan opposition politician Kizza Besigye, visited her husband, who was charged and jailed last week. She says Besigye is not shaken by the actions of the government, but she says the events have left their family psychologically disturbed.
We have a son who is 25 and is a student in the United States. I've been talking to him every day. He is very, very stressed, let me put it that way. He's very anxious, he's finding it hard to focus on his studies, and very, very upset and emotionally troubled.
Besigye is alleged to have been abducted by Uganda security operatives from Kenya's capital, Nairobi, where he had gone to attend a book launch by Kenyan opposition leader Martha Karua. Byanyima, who is also the executive director of UNAIDS, says Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni should respect divergent political views.
Anyone who steps up to challenge President Museveni is seen as a traitor, not wishing well for the country. It's so wrong. We must start on the basis that everyone who wants to lead Uganda is doing it in good faith.
Uganda opposition leader Robert Chagurani, commonly known as Bobi Wine, also visited Besigye this past weekend.
The Kenyan government should be ashamed of it. We condemn the impunity of the Ugandan regime, and we call upon all well-wishing Ugandans to stand against this, to condemn it, and to work so hard to see that we return our country with the rule of law.
Semujunganda is a member of parliament and a spokesman of the Sprinter Forum for Democratic Change party faction leaning toward Kizza Besigye. He says the party wants to sue the governments of both Uganda and Kenya for breach of international laws and, in particular, East African community principles that allow free movements of citizens among member states.
Kenya should be home. That's why you're not required to have a visa. You just go to Kenya and they stamp in your passport. Even when you don't have a passport, you can go to Kenya with an ID. So we thought Kenya is a home. So we will ask the Kenyan High Commissioner to tell us if they have ceased being a home, but also tell us why they are targeting our leaders, humiliating them, torturing them.
Besigye and his co-accused, Obedi Kamlejea, were on Thursday charged for illegal possession of firearms and conspiring to breach Uganda's security. Kenyan government has denied role in the alleged kidnapping of Besigye. For VOA News, I am Mugume Davis Rwakarinji in Kampala, Uganda.
As the world marks the International Day for the Elimination of Violence Against Women today, Monday, activists are worried about the rise in femicide across Africa. Here's more from our reporter in Abuja, Nigeria.
Femicide is the gender-based killing of women. According to the United Nations, Africa has the highest femicide rate in the world. Most of them occur in South Africa, Nigeria, and Kenya. In 2022, the UN reported that more than 20,000 women and girls were killed by intimate partners, family members, and strangers, though certain numbers of femicide in Africa remain unaccounted for. Blessing Chinedu is a survivor whose partner and the father of her children poured acid on her face. She describes her experience.
This is now 5 months now.
This is 5 months now. June 6, 2024, this year. That's when it happened. As of today, I don't know what I did to make him pour acid on my face. Because that very day before this happened, we didn't fight. We didn't quarrel. I saw him pouring something on my clothes. Blessing Chinedu, like every surviving victim of femicide in Africa, is seeking for justice. However, there are reports of cases where authorities fail to respond to victims' plea or families' plea for help. A woman and children's rights activist, Wanda Ebe, told VOA that most femicide cases in Africa are swept under the carpet by authorities.
When men kill women in Africa or in Nigeria as a case study, and the case is reported at the station, the police will even aid the perpetrators to report the matter as unknown cause of death. These cases are being downplayed and they are also being underreported. And that's why it keeps going on and on and on, and it's even getting worse these days.
Underreporting and varying definitions of what can be classified as femicide make it difficult to get accurate figures on the killing of women in Africa. Ebe calls on officials to stop ignoring femicide and blaming the victims.
If African leaders and security personnel who handle femicide cases in a firm way, with open sanctions, for people to truly see that the perpetrators are punished, femicide will stop.
She says everyone must create a culture where women are secure and valued by speaking out, promoting awareness, and encouraging change. The International Day for the Elimination of Violence Against Women acts as a catalyst for change and empowers individuals and communities to stand against all forms of violence. This is VOA News in Abuja, Nigeria.
Mozambique's presidential election runner-up, Venancio Mondlane, has placed conditions on his participation in a meeting with the country's president to end weeks of political unrest over the disputed elections. Charles Mawiro reports from Maputo.
In a 7-page document, Mozambique presidential candidate Venancio Mondlane laid out his conditions for participating in a meeting proposed by President Filipe Nyusi. Among his demands, Mondlane requests that the legal proceedings against him be dropped and that his participation be virtual. He also wants the release of all those arrested as part of the violent protest that he had called for, and guarantees of political and legal security for the actors and players in the dialogue. Among the items on the agenda, Mondlane proposed 20 points, including re-establishment of the electoral truth and criminal and civil liability for what he says are those involved in falsifying the electoral process. The document was delivered by Dinesh Tivani, a representative of the Podemos party, which backed Mondlane in the presidential race. Tivani revealed some of the contents of the letter, saying that the electoral truth was exactly what Venancio himself said. Votes are not negotiated, they are counted. Mondlane also demanded that certain institutions and individuals participate in the talks. Political analyst Dercio Alfazema said Mondlane accepted Nyusi's invitation, but the conditions showed otherwise. He said that if it were up to Mondlane, he would not participate in this meeting. And depending on that, the meeting could be held with other candidates or not take place at all. And it will be very difficult for all who are worried and want a solution to this problem. Alfazema added, we all believe that the best way out of this problem is dialogue. Preliminary results showed the Frelimo candidate, Daniel Chapo, won the presidential with 71% and Mondlane, who ran as an independent, came second with 20%. A political and social crisis marked by fraud allegations and disputed results has engulfed Mozambique since the October 9th elections. Mozambique immediately fell into a climate of uncertainty that has affected daily life and the economy. At least 6 people have died in protests, and several regions of Mozambique have seen blockades, looting, riots and violence, with emphasis on border areas and economic centers. Charles Mangwiro, VOA News, Maputo, Mozambique.
You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Monday, November 25th. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Still to come on our program, Samson O'Malley Sports. Nigerian security forces have launched new operations to dislodge Boko Haram and Islamic State-affiliated fighters who have overrun several towns and villages in the northeast and west of the country. Former Nigerian Army spokesman and retired Brigadier General Sani Usman tells viewers Chinedu Ofor that the jihadist groups are on the run.
There was a time when the whole symbol of security and democratic governance were desecrated, including that of the symbol of international peace and security, which is the United Nations building. You remember, the media was attacked, the police headquarters was attacked, the most secure barracks was attacked, bus terminals, businesses, and all the rest, and the number of checkpoints, even within Abuja. And eventually, the terrorists were pushed gradually to north east to Borno and Yobe, eventually Borno, consigned to Sambisa, Alagarno, and some fringes of Lake Chad region. So if you juxtapose it with what is happening now and what was happening in the past, I think there are semblance of development and progress in the sense that some people have started going back to their ancestral home, and there is even heavy traffic build-up in Borno, in Maiduguri and all the rest. And commercial activities and social activities have started picking up generally in the northeast and all the rest. Now, coming back to the Northwest, sincerely speaking, yes, progress is being made, but the average person were still contending with issues that bordered on these criminal elements of kidnappers and bandits, simply because there is that kind of instinct of igniting the resilience of the people.
Reports, both international and local, even within the Nigerian security agencies, have concluded that these terrorists, IS affiliated groups, even Boko Haram, they're just drifting and out of the border. Why is it that the Nigerian government is unable to secure its border and then possibly put an end to a certain extent the banditry and the terrorism?
It's not just Nigeria that is having problem. The United States border and immigration is a serious issue, especially illegal immigrants. You know what is happening with your border with Mexico and other parts. You should understand the circumstances under which the Nigerian state. I'm not holding brief for anybody. Take, for instance, in the northern part, we have over 1,800 or 1,600 kilometers of almost porous border with our northern borders. Take, for instance, Niger, Cameroon, and to some extent in Benin Republic. And I think there were about 3,000 or thereabout illegal entry. So basically, and it is not just for a state in itself to say that they can scale their borders for by themselves. No, you need the support and cooperation of your neighbors.
That's former Nigerian Army spokesman and retired Brigadier General Sani Usman speaking from Maiduguri, Borno State, where viewers Chinedu Ofor. Both sides in the ongoing dispute in Liberia's divided House of Representatives are expected to appear before the Supreme Court tomorrow, Tuesday. One group of lawmakers claiming to be the majority elected a new speaker last week to replace current speaker Jefonati Kofa. The group has accused Kofa of alleged conflict of interest. The Supreme Court issued a stay order last Friday for the majority to halt all actions and return to the status quo pending further court action. Eugene Colley is a member of the minority bloc which supports Speaker Kofa. He tells me the group welcomes the court's intervention.
Basically, from the end of the speaker, Mr. Button, we are okay with the ruling. You know that the first time the Supreme Court declined the writ of prohibition, the opposing forces were all jubilating, and today the court has turned on this side, so they are side. But again, that's the process. We have to respect the rule of law in Liberia.
What do you think the court means when it says to return to the status quo?
So, by the court giving mandate to our colleague to return the status quo ante, that means they have to disregard everything that they have started. Whatever they try to do to remove the speaker is in violation of the Constitution. So the court has not recognized them, even at the point where they have gone selecting a speaker, because we cannot call that election. You cannot have almost 27 or 28 of your members on the other side and you go about having election. And thank God the court did not recognize that. Of course, they had to revert to the meat chambers so that we can do business.
The Supreme Court, the House of Representatives, they are separate branches of government. Can the Supreme Court order the House of Representatives to do something?
So, Mr. Bodin, basically, you know, we have three branches that we operate in Liberia here. And if the Supreme Court is alive and is a final arbiter of ruling, they have the right to speak to any issue in Liberia, whether for an executive or whatever. So, yes, of course, they have given the ruling. So no one can say they are not to partake in the process. Because if you say that, of course, then I'm not sure such person will be a person of words or of trust to even work within the governance process. But you have to, again, listen to the court. And I want to say this, Mr. Button. The speaker has asked all of them to come back to session. If you want to continue with your removal process, come back in session. You will have the free time to see how best you can move on by soliciting signatures to remove the speaker. If you can't with a legitimate number, of course, we will adhere to that. And the speaker will waste no time to resign. But wherein you have 41 members in session and declaring that as 50, I think it was fraudulent, and the guys had to revert to status quo.
Thank you so much. A pleasure to speak with you.
Thank you, Mr. Bobby.
Representative Eugene Colley is a member of the minority bloc in the Liberian House of Representatives who support Embattled Speaker Jay Fonati Kofa. Countries around the world are bracing for economic upheaval as incoming U.S. President Donald Trump threatens massive tariffs, especially on China. The uncertainty has left governments and businesses struggling with how to respond, as VOA's Bill Gallo reports from Seoul, South Korea.
During his first term, Donald Trump imposed sweeping tariffs on China, shaking the global economy. Ahead of his return, Trump is vowing even more drastic measures, 10% tariffs on all imports to the U.S., and a staggering 60% on goods from China. While China hasn't commented directly on Trump's threats, it has warned against further trade tensions. Mao Ning is the Chinese Foreign Affairs Ministry spokesperson. She says, we don't answer hypothetical questions, but reiterates there's no winner in a trade war, nor will the world benefit from it. Any Trump tariffs could especially hurt economies that depend on exports. But an expanded U.S.-China trade war could also create opportunities. Many countries have benefited as production shifts away from China to avoid tariffs. Thailand's commerce minister recently told VOA's Thai service his country has seen an influx of U.S. companies relocating factories from China. He says we should be able to weather this. He actually sees these problems as benefits for Thailand. He believes we can be an investment destination for every country. That approach comes with risks, though. Many countries that gained from trade moving out of China now heavily rely on exporting to the United States, leaving them even more vulnerable to any blanket Trump tariffs or efforts to crack down on rerouted goods. The concerns stretch beyond the biggest U.S. trading partners. In Africa, where trade with the U.S. is already limited, higher tariffs could make access even harder, one analyst told VOA's Africa 54.
If we talk about manufacturing, if we're talking about production of produce, pineapples, and coming to the U.S. market, it's going to be difficult. I'm not optimistic about U.S. trade with Africa if we're talking about increasing tariffs.
Much of the uncertainty stems from Trump's unpredictability. During his first term, he often used the prospect of tariffs as a bargaining tool, before eventually striking individual trade deals, says analyst Jayant Menon.
Trump is not a protectionist, I think. He's a deal maker. That's what he likes to present himself as, you know, the art of the deal and all that. So he likes free trade agreements that he has a role in.
Menon says countries targeted by Trump could push for new trade agreements instead of tit-for-tat tariff escalations that could harm themselves and the global economy. Not all of Trump's proposals point toward increased protectionism. He's also suggested rolling back subsidies for U.S.-made electric vehicles, subsidies put in place by the Biden administration. Bill Gallo, VOA News, Seoul, South Korea.
It is time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Monday morning to you, Samson.
Good Monday morning to you too, James. We begin the sport with football. Liverpool extended their lead at the top of the English Premier League to 8 points, but were forced to come from behind to earn a vital late win at struggling Southampton after Egyptian international Mohamed Salah led a second-half comeback for the visitors. Liverpool were trailing 2-1 when Mo Salah scored twice in the second half to take his season's tally to 10 goals in the league, two behind the league's top scorer, Erling Haaland of Manchester City.
We were down 2-1, so I'm glad that we managed to win the game. That's the most important thing. I was confident that we're going to have chances, and just the only focus in my head at the time was to focus and use the opportunity to score.
In club women football, Democratic Republic of Congo side TP Mazembe are officially the champions of the CAF Women's Champions League Morocco 2024. A highly tactical and hard-fought 1-0 victory in the final played in Al Jadida Stade Ben Ahmed Al Abidi against former champions and host AS FAR saw the DR Congo side crowned the new champions of Africa for the first time, wiping away tears of their 2022 group stage exit. With a crowd backing the host, TP Mazembe showed great resilience and courage in taking the march to the former champions, who remain in search for what has been an elusive second title for them. In athletics, Burundi's Rodrigue Quizera confirmed his supremacy at the Cross International de la Constitution, the 8th gold meeting in this season's World Athletics Cross Country Tour in Alcobendas, Spain on Sunday, to become the only athlete to claim victory 3 consecutive times. Quizera reached the final line in 22 minutes 58 seconds, comfortably clear of Ugandan's duo of Martin Kiprotich, who came in second in 23 minutes 09 seconds, and Cherop, who completed the podium in another 24 seconds back. And now to basketball, where the draw for the 2025 road to the Basketball Africa League East Division Elite 16 took place on Sunday. The draw followed the conclusion of the group phase played in Tripoli, Libya, Douala in Cameroon, Harare in Zimbabwe, and Kibaya in Tanzania. The 8-team qualifier would take place at the Kasarani Indoor Arena in Nairobi, Kenya from Thursday, November 28th to Tuesday, December the 3rd. The competition consists of a round-robin system where teams will play a combined 16 games. And finally, to rugby, West South Africa national rugby team Springbok Flank. Peter Steve Du Toit was named World Rugby's Men's Player of the Year in a glittering ceremony in Monaco on Sunday night. Du Toit, who was World Rugby Player of the Year when the Springboks won the World Cup in 2019, joined Boadin Barrett as the only other player who has won the two Player of the Year awards with two players in history. And that does it for this Monday's edition of Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a very good Monday. And that's it for this Monday, November 25th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for beginning your week with us. For more African news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms, including Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are also on YouTube, where you can watch our TV show, Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I'm James Barton, Washington, wishing that you will have a great week. We'll